Coming up on This Week in Computer Hardware, AMD Ryzen mobile CPUs. Will AMD's ultra portables be faster than Intel's? It's official. NVIDIA's GTX 1070 Ti is coming. More mini ITX motherboards. Amazon gets the keys to your house and more. It's all coming up next on Twitch.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Twitch is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware, episode 438, recorded on October 26, 2017. AMD Ryzen laptops and the 1070 Ti.
This episode of This Week in Computer Hardware is brought to you by Tracker, a coin-sized tracking device that pairs with your smartphone and keeps you from losing your most valued possessions. Visit thetracker.com/twitch to save 20% off any order. And by iFixit, the free online repair manual for everything. Before you start your next build or fix, head over to iFixit.com/twit to snag the fully loaded ProTech toolkit for only $59.95, and check out their array of high-quality parts, tools, and guides. And by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. Lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident that you are getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/twitch.
Welcome to Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware, Twitch Weekly Show that aims to bring you the most useful, most engaging, most informative news about, you guessed it, kids, because you're smart, hardware, desktop, mobile. We don't care if it's laptop, cell phone. We even occasionally still get a chance to talk about tablets, though there aren't a whole lot of tablets anymore, are there? So sad. Mr. Ryan Trout joins me in lamenting tablets, or did you hate tablets from the beginning and are finally glad that the major manufacturers have caught up with your distaste and lack of need for tablets?
I don't dislike tablets. I just think they have very specific use cases. I use my tablets as consumption devices pretty much exclusively. You know, I tried an iPad Pro as a content creation. It kind of worked a little bit. Speaking of which, I just saw a news thing go by that Best Buy is now offering $150 off of iPad Pros. The 10.5 is $125 off, and 12.9 is $150 off. So
I'm laughing.
Perhaps they're not selling as amazingly as they thought they would.
I'm laughing because I saw two iPad Pros on a recent trip to Colorado or out and back. Yeah. And one of them was being used to watch movies, and the other one was being used to basically read spreadsheets. And I thought to myself, wow.
That's, you know, exactly what I have done with my iPad Pro.
Well, you know, you see an Apple presentation, you expect art, science, mayhem, world-changing documentation that's going to lead an organization into the 25th century. And, you know, you basically get some old issues, episodes of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and somebody trying to figure out the budget for their quarterly, whatever it is. But, you know, people just don't live up to the promise of the tools they've been given. I don't know. The quick editorial note before we move on. Something we were talking about on Tech Thing this week. Canary, the security camera manufacturer, who, as far as I know, is not a sponsor of this show, really ticked off my co-host Shannon, because she's owned them for a couple of years. She loves them. She's been an advocate. She's been like, buy a Canary. I love the Canary. It's so much less expensive than the stuff coming from Nest. And and they decided a couple days ago to start charging a monthly fee subscription for a bunch of features she relied upon, like the, you know, offsite data storage, the ability to watch clips more than 10 seconds long, some of the night vision features. And it's something to think about as you are investing in hardware, is if the hardware is intensely integrated with an offsite server system. And don't get me wrong, it's incredibly convenient. I got a buddy of mine that set up, you know, took like this $140 Chinese AVR box and a half dozen cameras and put something together for his sister-in-law, and it works. But the investment in that was considerably longer than, like, you know, plugging in a bunch of Nest cameras that cost 2.5 times as much and then paying, you know, $10 or $30 per camera a month. Well, for the first camera, then $5 or $15 for every additional camera after that. But, you know, he also, there are issues where the cameras and the AVR don't work together as well as he would like, and it would require additional work. And I got another buddy that set up like 26 cameras on a Synology system. I bring this up because as you're investing in the Internet of Things, even if you don't think of security cameras as being things of the Internet, think about what happens to that hardware if the back end stuff goes offline or becomes more expensive than you want to pay for. We've seen cases where the open source community has embraced and created servers to make hardware continue to work. And we've also seen cases where your delightful piece of hardware suddenly became an unsupported brick. So, just a thought from your friends over at Tech Thing. Have you had anything, you know, recently, other than, say, a certain streaming game console that became incredibly useless? Well, it became completely useless because it was kind of useless in terms of the delay in the games for the server-rendered stuff.
You know, I can't think of anything off the top of my head, but it seems impossible that that hasn't happened recently to me.
Maybe you're just cycling through so much stuff.
That's yes. Yes, actually, that's probably more likely.
So much joy. Speaking of joy, AMD Ryzen processor with Radeon Vega graphics launch, which means Ryzen and Vega have hit the laptop world, the world of notebooks. One of the two big announcements we've got for you on the show this morning, Ryzen, the world's fastest processor for ultra-thin notebooks, which, given that I just had an XPS 13 with an Intel processor show up on my desk this morning, with a quad-core coffee-like processor showed up, or, you know, semi-coffee-like processor. When are these shipping? How much are they going to cost? Are they as fast as they claim? What's the story, man?
So shipping in mid-November, HP Spectre X30, there's a Lenovo IdeaPad, there's an Acer Swift 3, I think, that will ship with it. Those are the three that they've kind of announced. Here's what's interesting about this part, right? So they claim it's the world's fastest processor for ultra-thin notebooks. It is Ryzen CPU cores, quad-core, multi-threaded. It is Vega graphics, 10 compute units and 8 compute units are options. They have pretty high base and boost clocks of 2.2 gigahertz and 3.8 gigahertz for the top-end part, and 1.3 gigahertz on the GPU clock. TDPs are around 15 watts, 12 to 25 is what they say the range is. The 15 watt is the nominal. So there's a little bit of question on how much power they're actually drawing and what their boost clocks and stuff are. The interesting thing is they basically have the best mobile GPU in terms of something that can be integrated onto a part. Their advantage is over Intel is clearly in the integrated GPU side. Their advantages on the CPU side were thought to not be realistic, I guess. Now, if you look at AMD's performance claims, you know, they show themselves slightly behind the quad core, the new 8th gen Intel parts in single threaded performance, but drastically ahead of the Intel and the multi-threaded performance, even against quad-core to quad-core. And if you think about it, that kind of logic takes a little bit to get around, because the, you know, if the single-threaded performance of Intel is better, then the same number of threads should continue to give Intel the advantage. And that slide that we're looking at there is clearly not the case. The indication, of course, is that the clock speeds of the Ryzen mobile part are higher in this configuration than the clock speeds of the Intel configurations. Now, I will caveat that blue bar number of 498 for the Cinebench score with we have quad-core 8th gen systems here that are showing over 600 in that same benchmark repeatedly. So the 498 seems to be like on the lower end. AMD is presenting, you know, I talked to them today. That's a number from a system that they have multiple systems of in their labs. It's a legitimate number. But it seems like they just happen to have gotten or chose to get the lower end number of the systems that are available out in the market. That's what's confusing about mobile processors in general. even though they might have the same specs from, you know, you might see the Intel Core i7-8550U integrated on five different systems, you might get five different results for performance because it's all about the thermals, the tuning, how high they can stay at those clock speeds before they have to pull back a little bit to maintain, you know, surface temperatures or whatever it happens to be. So you can't quite get an apples-to-apples comparison as easily. You kind of have to look at a handful of systems to get an idea. If you look at graphics performance, it's really not close between Ryzen Mobile and Intel integrated graphics. They have a slide here that looks at GPU performance.
Ryzen Mobile should
destroy them, right? It does. It's like 3x, right? excuse me. What AMD can do is without a discrete GPU, they can now match the performance of an Intel, you know, Core i5, Core i7 part plus a discrete NVIDIA GPU up to a certain level, right? So, you know, in this slide, they're comparing it to a GeForce 950M. You know, the GeForce MX150 is a little bit more modern, and you'll see that in some of the 8th gen and 7th gen Intel systems out there. And it's probably going to be a little bit faster than what Ryzen Mobile can do, but not drastically so. And, you know, AMD is in my conversations with them, they're not saying this is a gaming laptop. But what they are saying is that if you do casual mainstream gaming, you're going to get a much, much better experience than you would on an Intel integrated system, which makes sense, right? And that's what that slide shows. League of Legends, Dota 2, Overwatch, CSGO, Quake Champions. You know, sometimes you're running at 1080p, sometimes you're running at 720p. You get some advantages, right? The architecture is just better and it's faster. You get better driver support from AMD than you do from Intel on these games, right? They have this whole discrete GPU legacy that's using the same architecture. So in theory, you should always be a little bit better with the AMD Ryzen than you will with the Intel graphics. So that's their big push. And this is the first time AMD has been able to really come into the 15-watt thin and light market with a competitive product in many years, right? They've had APUs, they've had, you know, other CPU-GPU combinations where the GPU has always been pretty good, but the CPU has been pretty weak and the power efficiency was pretty bad. So battery life was not fantastic. They in theory, having not tested these systems myself yet, are closing a lot of that ground. I still have some questions. You know, there's more in this story about some of the architectural stuff they have done in terms of being able to run each core at its own clock and voltage, having discrete voltage planes between the different segments of CPU, GPU, and how power efficient they can make it and what advantages Infinity Fabric might offer. And that's all really important. But at the end of the day, it comes down to, for this class of system, what is your performance? What's your battery life? And then what kind of extras can you offer? And I think that gaming and graphics storyline is going to be one of those extras that AMD offers. So if their battery life is competitive in the same form factors, then they should be able to do pretty good here. Now, like, that spider graph is really interesting. The blue line represents Intel. The red, yellow line is the Ryzen 7 2700U. Like, there's a couple of these that I'm not real big fans of how they came to these numbers. Like the power efficiency in the upper left of that spider graph shows that the Ryzen part is more power efficient. All they're doing is taking the Cinebench score and dividing it by 15 watts for each. And one, I kind of think that their Cinebench score that they show for themselves is running higher than 15 watts, even if it's for a short period of time. And the number that they showed for Intel for Cinebench is lower than numbers I've seen. So, you know, I hesitate to believe that AMD's
massaged the results to give their part the best possible portrayal for purposes of marketing and creating buzz.
I'm saying that might be the case. That could possibly be the case. And it's, you know, everybody does it. So that's what our role here is as reviewers, as editors, to try to look at these types of things and find out what the truth is. And honestly, again, we might get all three of these AMD systems in and they might all three perform to different degrees, right? Like if you look at the, I didn't put it in here, but there's an HP and Acer and a Lenovo. The Lenovo is the thinnest, lightest model, but it has single channel memory, which is a significant detriment to integrated graphics performance, right? So we don't yet know, you know, that Lenovo might have the longest battery life compared to the three, but you might be sacrificing a lot of that GPU advantage that you had. Maybe you're only 1.5x as fast or 2x as fast as opposed to 3x as fast as Intel parts. So there's still a lot to learn here between now and say end of November, you know, Thanksgiving timeframe when these systems are in the channel and they're selling regularly. But they're competitive. AMD is confident. And it looks to be a very, very good part. They just, you know, in this space, battery life is kind of king. Battery life and mobility are king and thin and lights and 2-in-1s. So that needs to live up to their claims and their demands, right? So we'll see if that is the case. And hopefully the other thing that has saddled AMD's mobile parts in the past is they've been built into lower cost, non-premium designs, right? So there's, you know, cheaper build, lower quality screen, you know, crappy trackpads. Those types of systems are what you would usually find AMD APUs in. If they can get past that stigma, you get in the HP, you know, Epic or whatever it is, the X360, you get in the Acer Swift 3, that's when you'll start to need to increase the brand cachet of Ryzen in this space along with it. So, you know, hopefully they'll be able to do that. And I think we'll know probably within a 2 to 3 week time frame what they're able to create out of all this.
I am seriously curious.
Yeah.
I am very, I mean, as somebody who's spent a fair amount of his own money on AMD Ryzen processors on the desktop, I love the idea of them beating out Intel. I am very curious to see if they can deliver on the power consumption side of that, because Intel spent a lot of time and a lot of money building up a lot of intellectual capital or intellectual portfolio around low power processing. We'll see. AMD Q3 2017 earnings, a pleasant surprise, writes Josh Walworth over at PCPer.com. A pleasant surprise being, wait a minute, is AMD making money? They actually exceeded the expectations. 1.64 billion, quote, up significantly from the expected 1.52 billion. That was the consensus on the street. Not that the street isn't often staggeringly wrong, if not moderately wrong. $71 million gap, $110 million non-gap net for the quarter, which is, quote, a 300% increase from a year ago. Why? Duh. Ryzen. Vega. Not that we can buy Vegas, but they sold a whole bunch of Vegas for several minutes before they all sold out. I exaggerate slightly. Vegas were available for several days. Let me check to make sure that they haven't magically reappeared on Amazon or Newegg. You haven't seen the AMD Vegas get shaken from the tree yet, have you?
Oh, no. No, no, no. Of course not. Why would I see that?
Well, you know, miracles can happen. Could have been a lost container. Oh, wait, here we go. Here's a MSI Radeon RX Vega 56 for $470 on Newegg. $470, or you can buy an open box power color Radeon RX Vega 56 for $475. I like that. Oh, $524 for an MSI Radeon RX Vega 56. So, you know, $472. Wow, $570 for a $400 card.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the GTX 70 is lounging at $427 to $400. We'll talk more about the AMD 1070 Ti a little later in the show, but just wanted to make sure that Vega GPUs, I should say, hadn't suddenly magically arrived in the marketplace. Josh writes that some of this was the, quote, bittersweet royalties from the console manufacturers. What's up with that? Bittersweet. Why are royalties bittersweet?
I think only in that the Q4 royalties will be down, so it leaves kind of a negative look on the future earnings. Not that they're, you know, the Xbox One X is going to be shipping, but they've already kind of paid licensing and royalties for that stuff. So bittersweet in that it may be the tail end of the highest portion of them, maybe, which then AMD has to go out and make up for by getting other semi-custom designs, or, you know, PlayStation planning another one, or Xbox planning another one, or whoever it is, kind of building upon that. So that's the only thing I could think of for the bittersweet descriptor on that phrase.
The bittersweetiness, as it were. Oh my goodness. In any case, congratulations to AMD. Because I feel like a year ago we were kind of like,
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know. 12-nanometer, looking forward to 12-nanometer process through GlobalFoundries sometime in the first half of 2018, which should TikTok give a little bit of a bump to the Ryzen Zen design, then maybe give them an opportunity to clean up the part layout, etc. Clean right. up that little glitch they had with that rare, mostly under Linux, potential glitch they had with one calculation or a few calculations. This is exciting. And, you know, we're still slowly seeing Coffee Lake products trickle out. Trickle. Or semi-Coffee Lake products, as the case may be. Oh, my goodness. This episode of This Week in Computer Hardware is brought to you by Tracker, people. Yeah, you like finding stuff. You like not losing your stuff, your phone, your wallet, your keys, your cat. Do you want to be able to find the things that are plotting against you, especially the cat hiding somewhere, trying to make you late? That's what the Tracker's all about, people. 8 years ago, Tracker changed everything when they released the first tracking device, and now they've done it again with the all-new Tracker Pixel. With Tracker Pixel, you never worry about losing your things again. It's the lightest Bluetooth tracking device on the market. Place Tracker Pixel on whatever you tend to lose, your keys, your wallets, even your cat. It's small enough to fit on your smallest items, kittens, if you will. When you misplace an item that has a Tracker Pixel attached, use your smartphone, and a 90-decibel alert will help you find it in seconds. The cat's not going to like that, but your keys aren't going to care. It even has powerful LED lights so you can find your items in the dark, which is fantastic if you drop your keys somewhere in the car. If you lost your phone, just press the button on your Tracker Pixel. Keep one on your key ring, right? And your phone rings even if it's on silent. You can even locate your item if it's miles away, because every Tracker user is part of the largest crowd locate network in the world. And Tracker's 30-day money-back guarantee means you truly have nothing to lose. Nothing to lose. You don't like it, you get your money back, people. That's the guarantee. Go to thetracker.com/twitch to save 20% off any order. That's thetracker.com/TWICH for 20% off. And we want to thank Tracker for their support of This Week in Computer Hardware. Amazon's got a deal. You spend a bunch of money with Amazon. You get a compatible door lock. You click on the digital paperwork. And they'll let your Amazon packages get put inside your front door.
Okay, so the Ring doorbell, they're a sponsor. Ryan's purchased Ring doorbells on his own.
Ring doorbell gives him the ability to see who's at the door, to talk to them remotely, to get images on his phone. Again, they are a sponsor, but he's actually spent his own money to buy additional Ring doorbell systems. And this is interesting what those crazy cats are doing. Amazon Key exclusively for Prime members. You know, it's not everywhere. Atlanta, Austin, Baltimore, Boston, Chicago. I mean, it's basically a whole bunch of urban metropolises.
It's here. It's here actually as well. So it lists Cincinnati, Ohio, but I put in my zip code in that and where I could get this if I wanted it. I'm trying to decide. One of my favorite caveats to this is they tell you that if you have pets that could reach the front door, you should not use this system because when – so I guess – I don't know if you said, like, the idea is, like, only the Amazon employed drivers would get this code, this pin to your front door. They'd be able to open your front door, put the box in, and then close the door. And it includes a camera as well that you mount onto the inside of your house that points to the foyer or whatever – so that you see when they put the package in and you see them leave it there and you see them close the door, right? In theory, you know, this covers both you and Amazon. So if that driver comes in and steals all your crap, you can, right. You have evidence. Amazon has evidence. If you make that claim and it didn't happen, all that type of stuff, right? So I think it's a really interesting idea. There's obviously a lot of privacy issues with it. Amazon says this is, you could use this for all the purposes too. If you wanted to let your dog sitter in and all that type of stuff, it's just a electronic keypad for that. I wouldn't get it for my house because I have two labs that would like to run out the front door if the FedEx or Amazon driver could just release it. It's something I would consider at the office because we already have security systems and security cameras, you know, that type of stuff. And we do often have an issue where like, oh, there's nobody at the office and there's a package that we're waiting for delivery, that type of stuff. So, it's a really interesting idea. And, for Amazon, what a great, you know, continuation of, hey, we own everything you do and buy and see and look at. So let's continue down that road, right? For somebody who's not your cell phone provider, like Google or Apple, it's amazing what they've been able to do.
I don't feel like this is like they're going to own me. I feel like this is a natural extension. You know, do you live in an area where stuff gets stolen? It's probably cheaper for them to implement this system, especially if you're paying $250 for the camera, right? You know, if you're paying a bunch of money up front, the Amazon Key in-home kit comes not just with the cloud cam, but a key compatible smart lock, right? So you have different options on that. But, you know, this is an extension to their existing services and may make people more comfortable with ordering from Prime if they're in one of those neighborhoods. You know, there's just people are always like, well, things get stolen in the city. And it's like, well, actually, it's suburbia where a lot of stuff gets stolen off porches. it's amazing what a high school kid that has no stuffs to give we'll do with an opportunity to grab something off the porch, but
I think it's also interesting that it is definitely, it's not UPS, it's not FedEx, it is the Amazon delivery guys, right? So it's another, you know, they've got their own planes, they're working on their own fleet of cars, now they're working on their own kind of delivery systems. Like, this is something that UPS or FedEx should have released as their product, right? As their technology,
I get what you're saying, but because this isn't even sold technically by Amazon. It's sold by an Amazon subsidiary, right?
Sure.
It's kind of funny because as you start clicking through this, where did it go? Sold. Ships from and sold by Amazon Digital Services LLC, exclusively for Prime members. So they literally set this up as a sub company in case like it all goes sideways. And it's like $140 for the Cloud Cam Key Edition, and then you're spending like $150 to $250 for the lock.
Right.
You know, it's interesting. They will do free installation for the lock. Yeah, you know, I will admit, because of the amount of time I spend with security professionals, I do not want a digital lock on my home, as convenient as it be. I have serious reservations about them, in part because every time I think something is secure, somebody figures out a way to crack it, which makes me really, you know, nervous about some of the home lock technology. That is my personal bias. Your mileage may vary, but you know, it's kind of impressive. I'm looking at like, let's see, I'm going to pre-order, add it to my cart. And what am I looking at here? Yeah. Like $290. For one of the less expensive options.
I'm kind of the opposite of you in regards to some of that. And like, I figure if somebody really wants to get into my house, a deadbolt's not going to stop them, right? Like, sure. I can kick through a deadbolt and break
have a good deadbolt and you install it correctly. But
if you have a metal frame on your door, then I'm with you. If you have a wood frame on your door, probably not.
There are wonderful, inexpensive devices you can use to augment the security of a deadbolt, even in a wood frame door, that will withstand some profound attacks and are still aesthetically attractive. I mean, yeah, you know, ideally I'd have a steel door in my house because I'm that kind of guy. But it's amazing, like a deadbolt with the proper, basically, you know, with an extended striker plate and a wrap around the door itself, it becomes enormously difficult to kick through a deadbolted door. You know, a non-reinforced deadbolted door, you're right, you can kick it out. That's the number one way people steal stuff in large parts of the affluent world, is they walk in, they go for a neighborhood where everybody's at work during the day. They walk to the back of the house. They kick the back door in. They can stuff everything they can stuff into their backpack. They walk and they go fence the gear, sell it on the street.
Right.
But, you know, that cheerful thought aside. I'm more bothered by, I'm more bothered by surreptitious, smart kid hackering, to use highly mispronounced technical terms. The idea of somebody being able to digitally unlock my door bothers me a lot more than somebody kicking my door in, as, you know, non-rational as that may sound. In any case, it's an interesting move for Amazon. I think it's very interesting that they created a sort of sub company to handle it. I don't know if that's, you know, in case there's fallout, they want to keep it separated from the mothership, or if because it was just easier to implement that way. You know, not something I need because, you know, we homeschool and there's people home all the time. I'm curious, you know, and, you know, our dog recently passed, so outside of the cats escaping, there's no animal-based potential animal loss or animal attack issue at our house, but probably going to hold off on that one for now.
Fair enough.
But that's me. ARM introduces the platform security architecture. Yeah. We talked a lot about crack last week. We talk a lot about a lot more than we used to about security on the show because of all the magnificently problematic hardware security issues we've had in the last couple of years. You know, Josh wrote this up at PCPer.com. Security is now more important than ever. ARM has a pretty good track record in providing solutions to their partners to enable a more secure computing experience in this online world. SecureCore back in 2000, TrustZone in 2003. That was adopted by third-party chip manufacturers. Platform security architecture includes software, firmware, and hardware. And so if you want to talk about crazy projections, right, ARM's put 100 billion chips or shipped 100 billion chips since 1991. Now, between 2017 and 2021, they expect another 100 billion ARM chipsets or chips are going to be shipped, like next 4 years, which is crazy. And so they're working with, you know, ARM-authored firmware to the PSA specification, open source licensing to make it easy to adopt, ARM V8-M based systems on a chip to basically to get this stuff out there in a wide way, reference implementations, all Cortex M devices with the ARM embed OS will have a PSA implementation. You know, this is a journey of years, right, is what ARM is saying. But they're trying to create a foundation of security that developers can build on. And this is important because so many of the processors in so many of the devices in the Internet of Things we've been complaining about, what's the last time your router had an update? Hint, it's not because it's secure. It's because they don't care anymore because there's no margins on, on fixing them. Hint, hint, hint. You know, it's one of the interesting things about some of the more expensive routers. They get more software updates because they don't want to piss off the customers that drop the long green. Or, you know, they implement an open source operating system that is maintained by the community and with the assistance of the company, and that allows them to, you know, rapidly evolve the security on it. But this is a big deal, and I think a smart deal from ARM. Because, you know, when you look at, there's ARM processors in places you would not expect them, and anything that increases the security on that, I think, is pretty, pretty cool. They also announced the ARM Trust Zone Crypto Island 300, which, if nothing else, I want to see on a T-shirt, Crypto Island. On the security enclave, the idea is going to isolate more security services,
LPWA storage automotive, and the ARM SDC600 secure debug channel, basically to close a common physical security vulnerability on debug ports. So it's cool. I like it. I'm glad they're taking the time to try to make us all more secure, or just give a really awesome back channel to the NSA. I'm kidding, ARM. That's humor. Don't sue us. Please, don't sue us.
Definitely. Definitely don't do that.
I beg you. While we're talking about security, the Reaper Internet of Thing botnet, quote, worse than Mirai, writes the Inquirer, infects 1 million organizations worldwide. Just when you thought it was safe to go back in the water. Checkpoint actually uncovered this. They're basically saying there's a massive botnet, something like 1 million organizations infected. And when they say organizations, essentially what they're saying is networks that have Internet of Things devices like IP wireless cameras. And it has been proven over and over again that if you dogpile enough tiny little low power chunks of logic inside of wireless cameras, And if you hack enough of them because they're so poorly implemented, you can create enough of a packet storm to take down huge swaths of the interwebs. And apparently it is evolving and gathering IoT devices much, 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 much faster than the Mirai botnet did. So they're saying Checkpoint basically says that there are some possible connections to Mirai based on the technical aspects, but this is entirely new, much more sophisticated, and spreading much, 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 much more rapidly.
Great.
Go ahead, D-Link, TP-Link, AVTech, Netgear, MikroTik, Linksys, Synology, and others. So,
great.
Yeah, the attack seems to be spread by the Internet of Things devices themselves, and this is growing in a huge way. Research.checkpoint.com, new IoT botnet storm coming. It is absolutely worth a read. It's kind of crazy when you look at it. And when I say crazy, I mean kind of sucktastic and terrifying. I don't want to use highly technical terms like that too often. So it'll be confusing. But just something to think about. You know, just saying. I love fixing things. As a matter of fact, our sponsor, iFixit, I've been using iFixit toolkits at least 3 times in the last couple days. I was putting a new cartridge on a turntable. I was opening up a piece of hardware to verify that it was properly grounded. And I believe, what was the other thing I did? Some terrible, wonderful thing involving that. Well, you know what? Take a look. Look at that, kids. Right there on your video screen. They're using spudgers. They're cracking open cases. Have you never seen one? Let me explain it to you. This episode of This Week in Computer Hardware brought to you by iFixit. They love to take stuff apart, and they love to teach people how to fix things. Constantly posting tear downs and repair videos for popular devices like the Galaxy S8, all the iPhones, the Switch. They are leading the charge in the electronics repair tools industry with their iconic black and blue ProTech toolkit. Check out the ProTech Toolkit and iFixit store. They're going to explain to you how each piece of the kit was meticulously designed. You're not going to find a higher quality toolkit like this on the market. Don't let the sleek design fool you. It's got beauty and brawn, high quality steel bits, and tools tough enough to handle any repair or mod you throw at them. Yes, I used it to replace a cartridge on a turntable, a relatively delicate operation, and then I had to balance that cartridge down to just under 2 grams for the tracking weight. I also used the ProTech Toolkit to fix actually used it to adjust the idle on the 1,100-pound Cummins diesel engine in my truck. These tools are great. The bits are amazing. 64 bits in that driver kit. You're looking at the video. Just about any DIY electronics repair. A nice, easy-to-open protective case. Keeps the bits organized, holds them in place in the foam. Open it up, flip it over. The bits won't fall out. And then the whole bit kit itself is held in place by a magnetic mat, which is awesome because, one, it keeps the bit kit from falling out of the roll-up. And you can use it as a nice spot to hold tiny components and screws as you're pulling things apart. Swivel top magnetic precision driver and a flex extension, which is also magnetic for those hard to reach screws like the ones that are sometimes tucked inside the edge of a PC case. They got plastic opening tools, spudgers, and picks to make it easy to safely poke and pry to crack open the electronics you need to repair. That thing you're looking at right now in the video, that's a Jimmy. That's iFixit's design. It's a slim, flexible, spring steely kind of blade with a soft rubber handle, and it makes it great to, jimmy things open, people. ESD-safe tweezers and ESD safety strap if you're all belt and suspenders so you don't destroy your job with static shock. And the best part, iFixit tools are backed by iFixit's lifetime warranty. You don't need to buy something to get iFixit's free repair sources. Check out over 25,000 free repair guides over at iFixit.com. If you want to tackle your next hack, fix, or build with the ProTech Toolkit, visit iFixit.com/twit to snag the fully loaded ProTech Toolkit for only $59.95. Thanks, iFixit. And I got to say, if you're looking forward to holiday shopping, iFixit, amazing collection of stuff. And I love their teardowns.
I would say even if you're not looking forward to it, you should look towards iFixit.
And you know, you don't have to spend money there to get the repair guides for over 9,000 devices. I love you, iFixit. Good stuff. Man. So imagine, if you will, a world with two competing graphics companies. There's perhaps a third processor manufacturer that occasionally claims to be closing in on the two lead 3D GPU performers. But in reality, it's really a 1-2 fight between, let's call one NVIDIA and let's call the other one AMD, just for the purposes of our thought experiment here. And one of them releases a new hotly anticipated GPU on the wake of their hotly anticipated CPU, which has delivered unprecedented performance value for the dollar. And let's say they actually manage to take over one of the prime spots in the retail market, the best performing $400 GPU. What do you do if you're the other company? In this case, we'll call them NVIDIA. Well, you drop an entirely new GPU that practically guts the price performance numbers for your top of the line everyday $500 GPU. You call it the GTX 1070 Ti. And, you know, I'm not kidding here. If the numbers we've seen leaked, and we talked about it a couple weeks ago, are correct, this is essentially $500 worth of GTX 1080 for $400, called the GTX 1080 Ti. Mostly, I think, so that NVIDIA can claim they have the best, almost entirely. So NVIDIA can have the best performing GPU at $400. And as a side benefit, they get to piss me off because I bought a GTX 1070 a couple months ago. Not that I'm bitter about that. You know, we said it before. The rumors are pretty much correct. 2,432 CUDA cores up from 1,920 on the 1070, which is a huge freaking jump. And within 128 of the GTX 1080. Clock frequency goes up 101 megahertz up to 1607 megahertz. We can expect overclocking beyond the 1683 megahertz boost clock, which is technically the same as GTX 1070. Increase in texture units, a jump in TDP, so you're going to be sucking down 180 watts, which is a little bit higher, but not much. 8.1 teraflops peak computing power compared to 5.7 teraflops on the 1070. 1070 drops to 349. The MSRP currently is 449 on the GTX 1070 Ti, but that's okay because, as we mentioned earlier in the show, you pretty much can't buy a Vega 56, and if you do, you're paying $470 or higher for it. When are they going to ship, man?
So they're on pre-order now. Apparently they're shipping for November 2nd. Reviews will be able to go up November 2nd, so next Thursday. Couple of interesting things that I found out since we posted this news story. One is, if you look at MSI announced 5, EVGA announced 4 models. If you look at all of them, they all have the same claimed base and boost clock speeds. None of them are overclocked. None of them come from the vendors overclocked, which is pretty interesting. NVIDIA is not allowing add-in card partners to ship pre-overclocked cards. Now, you can still overclock them yourself. You can still use software and overclock them by offsets and, you know, small tweaks to voltage and memory and all that stuff. You can do all that yourself once you get the card. But out of the box, they're not letting people do that. And the reasoning, NVIDIA hasn't said this, but the obvious reasoning is that it's the 1070 Ti and the 1080 performance are not that far apart, a handful of percentage points at the most.
Right.
So it was going to be very likely that some overclocked 1070 Ti was going to outperform the GTX 1080, stock to stock. And in order to avoid that total, nightmare PR disaster. Yeah. They just said, just don't overclock him out of the box. So now you still see, MSI has five different cards that have five different coolers on them. EVGA has four different coolers. They even use the same, FTW, SC, Black Edition, all the same monikers they've used before. Only this time, the only differentiation point is the cooler implementation and whatever other stuff they might have. Right. And from my understanding, these vendors aren't even allowed to bin the parts, right? So the higher end cards don't get the best GPUs necessarily. It's kind of more luck of the draw here. So the only thing you get for paying more for a higher price EVGA or MSI card is the potential for more overclocking for that specific GPU because you have a better cooler in place. So it's really odd. NVIDIA did this whole launch very odd. They didn't brief media about this before launch at all. They didn't send out cards before this launch at all. I haven't seen one of these products yet. I think we have one or two coming in tomorrow. Like I said, they kind of didn't communicate to their partners what they were doing and why and what it was all going to be about. It's a very odd launch. It's still kind of surprising in some ways that they would even do this. Dropping the price of the 1080 a little bit would have been another option to have, as opposed to this. Cause I feel like, if there's a 1070 Ti and a 1080 in stock and they're at their MSRP, you would always buy the 1070 Ti at this point.
Right.
There's obviously some noise in the system that is the mining craze that's still ongoing, although not as dramatically about, screwing up GPU prices and availability and stuff. And I expect this card to be, unfortunately, very popular with that crypto mining audience because it is using the same lower latency memory as the GTX 1070, but has higher performance like the GTX 1080. So that's another reason to, if you can find a pre-order for one and this is the kind of product and performance metrics you're looking for, nab it while you can. They're going to sell. They're selling the Founders Edition through NVIDIA.com. They're pre-ordering Asus and EVGA and MSI and Gigabyte cards and all that stuff on the normal Amazon Newegg locations. Mm-hmm. It's a really odd launch from my end on the back end of all we heard was rumors about this. And I kept thinking to myself, well, it's not really going to be launched on the October 26th because in the last 16 years, I have never been not contacted by NVIDIA.
Right.
For a new product launch, even if it's like a Quadro or a something like that, right? I usually get some kind of notice about it beforehand. So I don't really know if that's indicative of anything for the future of what they're going to do, or they themselves understand that this is a very odd card to introduce very late in the game that is purely reactionary, and so they just kind of, here it is, we don't want to talk about it, buy it if you can buy it, right? That's kind of the mentality, right? I think they're taking with it. So I don't know. If it increases availability for people, I'm all for it. If not, it's just another product to be hard to find.
Well, I mean, we were joking last week, or maybe I was joking last week with the idea that they'd stockpile a warehouse of these to last them through the entire holiday shopping system. And once they had millions of them waiting in the warehouse or tens of thousands or whatever the magic forecasting number was, then they would make the announcement. But this just feels like a giant sort of corporate ego-driven announcement to kind of beat up on the competition. Yeah. And, of course, to sell more cards to miners. But we'll see. We'll see, kids. We'll see. As much as I'd like to say, I will wait for the PC per benchmarks. It's a significant increase over the performance of my 1070, but I'm not sure I'm going to buy a whole new $450 card 3 months after I bought a $400 card that's now a $350 card. Unless I can find somebody, if you're interested in a 1070, then I can actually buy a 1070 Ti, please. Tweet at Patrick Norton. We'll work something out, especially in the Bay Area. Oh my goodness. While we're talking about hardware, those crazy kids over at Hard OCP, hi Kyle. They overclocking the Intel 8600K wasn't enough, so they popped the lid on it. If you haven't been paying attention in the past few months, delidding is the cool guy 21st century way of potentially wiping out your processor after, well, in the process of removing the heat spreader to allow better contact between your cooling system and the processor itself. If you scroll down a little bit, you start to get the idea there. They're basically showing off the mating surfaces inside of there. And, they're running like $400 worth of cooling before you add in the fittings and the tubings and the fans and the couplings. Quote, representing some of the most expensive cooling you could ever use to overclock the 8600K. And you may be looking at this with great emotional pain and thinking, why? Why? Well, because they wanted to see how this thing overclocked, when they were playing around with the stock TIM, the thermal interface material, which is, that's what they put in between the integrated heat spreader and the CPU die, right? Enthusiasts claim they can do better than the stuff that's in between the CPU die and the heat spreader. I think Intel thinks they're kind of crazy. AMD uses an indium-based solder as its TIM, writes Kyle, which conducts heat much more efficiently than the, quote, tragic paste Intel shovels into its, quote, enthusiast, unquote, SKU processors. Kyle, of course, being the master of subtleties, the master of the subtle insults. And they're basically saying, quote, since Intel has left us with a feeble TIM, we have to do our best to fix that. The video below outlines a very safe way to go about delidding your expensive CPU that came with a cheap TIM. Can you feel the love, Intel? Me either. It's an interesting read. If you are curious what the results are, think about knocking 10 degrees Celsius off your die temperatures. So...
That's substantial.
5.3 gigahertz, not stable with the stock TIM. They could get, quote, fairly good 5.3 gigahertz stability using a 1.44 volt V core. And Cal says he's not going to suggest that 1.44 volts is a, quote, safe, unquote, V core to run as your stock setting. And it also increased the die temperature up, but there's some interesting screenshots, like 2.5 hours into a Prime 95 run, some still stable 6 hours after that, and finally through a blue screen of death. So, not a fully stable overclock, but far from unstable. And it indicates that 10 degrees Celsius drop indicates that there are some significant improvements you can make over the thermal interface material that are inside of your Intel processors. So this is interesting. A little scary, but people are working out ways to make this possible. Have you ever thought about doing something like this, or is this just a little more enthusiast than you want to get at this point?
I've only thought about it.
He says to the man in a room with 23 computers.
Well, yeah. The only time I would ever want to do something like that is for a story, for testing, for evaluation. I'm not the kind of user who wants to do that myself, that I feel like I need that difference in the overclocking potential of the hardware that I would use, or even that we would use for our testing stuff. But that would be like a good experiment, sure, for us to run and give feedback on. But no, for myself as a consumer, I wouldn't go down that road either.
Well, I highly recommend the read. It's over at hardocp.com, and props to Kyle and the crew over there. Oh my goodness. Mortgages, three of the most scary words you'll ever run into in the 21st century, which is why, people, this episode of This Week in Computer Hardware is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Seriously, people, the mortgage experience, not keeping up with the times. It's just painful, dated, definitely not client-focused, and needed a client-focused technological revolution, which is why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. Gives you the confidence you need when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. It's simple. You can fully understand all the details, be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. It's convenient. They're trusted partners. Well, hey, they allow you to share your financial information with Rocket Mortgage at the touch of a button.
powerful. Whether you're looking to buy your first home or your 10th, Rocket Mortgage is able to perform thousands of calculations in seconds. And based on your income, your assets, your credit, Rocket Mortgage can analyze all the home loan options for which you qualify and find the one that's just right for you. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/twitch. That's rocketmortgage.com/TWICH. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumeraccess.org, number 3030. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support of This Week in Computer Hardware. Man, we've been talking about crazy water cooling over at Hard OCP. Zotac finally dropped their water-cooled GTX 1080 Ti Arctic Storm Mini last week. They teased it back at Computex. Tim's got the write-up on PC Per. Dual slot, metal back plate, full cover water block that has been shortened so it can fit into micro ATX cases, maybe even some mini ITX form factors. 8.35 inches long, 6.46 inches high, with a custom shortened PCB that, quote, appears to be the same platform as the dual fan air-cooled model. As a mini ITX case enthusiast, I am delighted by this. I am also a little terrified to find out what the pricing is going to be. Zotac has not revealed the exact pricing or availability. Quote, but with the full-size GTX 1080 Ti Arctic Storm already selling for $809 on Amazon or $820 over at Newegg, which is not really a mining issue, but the expense of a full plate water block on a processor or on a GPU issue, it's possibly, it could easily go well over $800, $840 at launch, hopefully with the price Tim suggests going down over time. So, you know. He also notes that he would have loved to see this be a single card slot with the DVI dropped, but you can't have everything.
Shipping, I also wanted to. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, Zotac says said on Facebook it should be shipping in late November. So
got it. I'm glad you put the story in here about the world's only X299 mini ITX motherboard, because not quite as crazy sounding as a mini ITX Threadripper motherboard and those kind of mock-ups that they created. This one still is pretty insane. They're able to get onto a mini ITX design, right? So it's a X299. So it's for your Skylake X platforms. It's got four memory slots, but they are so dim slots, so essentially laptop style memory. You still have 2 gigabit Ethernet. You still have a full length by 16 slot. You have 3 M.2 slots on this motherboard, 2 on the back, 1 in a vertical riser on the front. Still 6 SATA channels. You're gonna want that
case with the open back on it.
Yeah, probably. You've got your wireless connectivity. This is impressive, and BitsPower is even selling, speaking of water cooling again, a full coverage water block that fits this particular board. So it covers the socket but stays between.
What that's going to cost, but slots. I just think that's the coolest thing.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Giant water block.
Yeah. So if you wanted to get as much performance into as small of a computer as you could possibly get it, now you're getting into that realm.
Yes, you are.
It seems unnecessarily small. I don't know. Because if you don't go water cooling, you have to have a pretty beefy cooler on these devices, on these Skylake X parts. So you're going to need to have a lot of vertical space above that board for that cooler, which means you're getting into, you know, micro ATX style designs. So I don't know, but I thought it was interesting. I was glad you threw that in there as well. So
no, I was kind of fascinated by it. You know, and which also it got me to take a look, because, you know, I love the Mini S4 case that I've got for my Intel, but the Intel processor, it's feeling that 6700 is feeling a little laggy, a little slow compared to the 1800X. I've got a 1700X processor, and I was like, man, just, you know, there's only like one Mini ITX board now. And I started puttering around on Newegg, and I found, micro ATX, but there's like 199 micro ATX motherboards for sale right now, new, not open box or anything. But I'm seeing 199 micro ATX motherboards on Newegg.com, and then at least two or six, like mini ITX. See if I can get the link on there correctly. There we go. ASRock, BioStar, Gigabyte. You know, depending on what day I do the search, the mini ITX shows up at kind of like different amounts.
Interesting.
I feel comfortable in saying like there seem to be six at least of the mini ITX. So, you know, it's a thought. if you're looking to build a small Ryzen based system, there are a bunch of options out there. And it's crazy, right? For those mini ITXs, there's B350, X370s available, and for the micro ATX, A320, B350, and X370 chipsets, which means you've got everything from the enthusiast, overclockable, crossfire ready X370 through the overclockable B350, what they call their mainstream board, and the A320, which is the non-overclocking kind of mainstream motherboard chipset from AMD. So I had no idea. And in case you're worried, yes, there are at least two models from MSI that have a just metric ton of ambient lighting in the motherboard, at least if you like red. And they're inexpensive. Like H320 and B350 boards are selling for $60 or $70, which seems incredibly reasonable to me, given what I paid for the first motherboard I bought for my build project. Even before I bought it a second time, because Amazon couldn't deliver the first one. Not that I'm bitter about that. but I'm actually pretty freaking psyched about the possibility of building a mini ITX, mini ITX PC. Also, I should point out, if you are curious about powering that, there are actually now 400 watt DC to DC PSUs for some of those smaller cases, which if you've never seen one, we did a build video on Tech Thing, and we used one of the lower powered HDPlex DC to DC chipset or DC to DC power supplies, and you know it was like 200 watts, 250 watts, and now they've gotten up to 400 watts on a DC to DC ATX converter. So if you're looking to build, that is essentially right there, that board, which looks incredibly small because it is incredibly small, is a fairly robust 400 watts power supply. So I'm pretty stoked about that. And I got to figure out what it'll take to power that power supply, but I feel like there is a build, a very small build in my none too distant future. So
nice.
Just thinking out loud about that one with lots and lots more cores. So with that, ladies and gentlemen, one last thought before we go. Microsoft has stopped manufacturing the Kinect. It's all about the augmented reality now. Thank you so much for what you did with us, Kinect. Dancing games. Drunken people playing dancing games. Drunken coworkers that shouldn't be playing dancing games playing dancing games. And lots of interesting hacking projects. Godspeed.
It was a good run.
Yeah, it was a good run. Like 35 million units. It's amazing to realize that came out in like 2010. Something like 35 million of the depth camera and voice recognition microphones sold. So props to Microsoft. Good luck to the Kinect. And if you have some sort of crazy Kinect project that needs Kinects to be connectable, you know, go buy more Kinects before they run out or start stalking them on eBay. So,
yeah.
Just a thought. PCPer.com, ladies and gentlemen, that's the place to find more Ryan Trout and all the hardware coverage they have, including, I suspect, in the very near future, full benchmarked reviews of the 1070 Ti, the new card from NVIDIA we talked about earlier. We'll let you know whenever we actually see Vega cards for sale again. AMD Ryzen laptops, we're both going to be yelling at vendors to send us some for evaluation. And, of course, each and every week you can find This Week in Computer Hardware at twit.tv/Twitch. That'll give you all the older episodes, access to all the RSS feeds, links to Mr. Shrout and myself. And hey, I'm Patrick Norton. You can find me over at Tech Thing, or if you're into music and home theater, do me a favor, check out avxl.com. With that, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us. I'm Patrick Norton.
I'm Ryan Shrout.
We'll see you next week on Twitch.